Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Exonerated Defendants Cost Recovery Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On April 19th, 2017, the Supreme Court decided Nelson v. Colorado, along with Madden v. Colorado. In both cases, petitioners had collectively paid several thousand dollars to the state of Colorado in costs, fees, and restitution payments following their respective convictions for several offenses. Petitioners' convictions were thereafter invalidated for various reasons. Nelson was retired but acquitted. The state elected not to appeal for re-entry in Madden's cases. Both petitioners sought a return of the funds the state had required them to pay. Nelson's trial court denied her motion outright, and Madden's post-conviction court allowed a refund of costs and fees, but not restitution. The Colorado Court of Appeals concluded that both petitioners were entitled to seek refunds of all they had paid, but the Colorado Supreme Court reversed. It reasoned that Colorado's compensation for certain exonerated person statute provided the exclusive authority for refunds, and because neither Nelson nor Madden had filed a claim under the Act, the courts lacked authority to order refunds. The court also held that there was no due process problem with the Act, which permits Colorado to retain conviction-related assessments unless and until the prevailing defendant institutes a discrete civil proceeding and proves her innocence by clear and convincing evidence. By a vote of 7-1, the Supreme Court reversed the judgment of the Supreme Court of Colorado and remanded the case. Justice Ginsburg delivered the opinion of the court, which held that Colorado's Exoneration Act scheme deprived petitioners of the due process guaranteed under the 14th Amendment. Petitioners' interest in regaining their funds is high, the risk of erroneous deprivation of those funds under the Exoneration Act is unacceptable, and the state has shown no countervailing interest in retaining the amounts in question. To comport with due process, a state may not impose anything more than minimal procedures on the refund of exactions dependent upon a conviction subsequently invalidated. Justice Ginsburg's majority opinion was joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Kennedy, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Justice Alito filed an opinion concurring in the judgment. Justice Thomas filed a dissenting opinion. Justice Gorsuch took no part in the consideration or decision of this case. To discuss the case, we have Ethan Blevins, who is staff attorney at the Pacific Legal Foundation. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Blevins.
So the Supreme Court recently decided a case called Nelson versus Colorado, which is essentially a due process case that questions the constitutionality of a portion of the state's Exoneration Act. The petitioners here were exonerees. Shannon Nelson had been accused and convicted of various offenses related to the alleged abuse of her children. She had her conviction overturned, reversed for trial error, and then she was acquitted on retrial. And she had paid out about $700 in various fees, costs, and restitution. She ultimately would have owed in the course of her sentence about $8,000 in fees, costs, and restitution, just all related to her conviction. And the other petitioner, Lewis Madden, had some convictions related to prostitution, also paid out some money in costs, fees, and restitution. Similarly, his conviction was reversed, and the prosecutors decided not to retry him. So these were both individuals who had been exonerated. Their previously valid convictions had been overturned, and they wanted their money back, this money that they had paid out in payments entirely connected to a valid conviction. And in Colorado, all of that money is sort of lumped together with your right to compensation under the Exoneration Act. And like most exoneration acts in the United States, Colorado's says, if you want to be compensated for time served after your conviction has been overturned, you're going to have to prove to us by clear and convincing evidence that you're innocent. Now, that broader proposition that the right to compensation is tied to the petitioner proving their own innocence is not the issue. In this case, the issue is whether or not the fees, costs, and restitution payments that were paid in connection with a conviction can also be subject to this high burden of proof that requires a exoneree to prove their own innocence to get back money that was already theirs. And so the question before the Supreme Court of the United States was simply whether imposing this burden of proving your own innocence to get back money that is now officially yours because the state no longer has any valid interest in it, whether that burden violates the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. And seven justices of the eight who were involved in that decision said, yes, this violates the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. The Court of Appeals below, the State Court of Appeals, had held that you should be due an automatic refund and that the Exoneration Act violates due process by placing any burden at all on the exoneree who wants to get their money back. If you are an exoneree, what you have to do is is actually in a separate civil proceeding move to receive that money back and prove your own innocence. And the Court of Appeals said that instead an automatic refund should be due to you in the criminal proceeding itself after your conviction has been reversed or vacated. And the Supreme Court of Colorado reversed with one dissenting justice. And the Supreme Court of Colorado basically said, hey, this is really a separation of powers concern because we don't want courts using their equitable powers to sort of mess with the legislature's primacy in how to use its revenue. So they were worried about the courts making inroads into this core legislative authority over the state's funds. You know, the Supreme Court, unfortunately, doesn't really address that, but, of course, the U.S. Constitution is supreme over any state interest in separation of powers, so that's probably why the court didn't feel a need to really address the Supreme Court of Colorado's initial rationale for reversing the State Court of Appeals. But so six justices of the eight joined the majority opinion. Justice Alito concurred, and Justice Thomas was the sole dissenter, with Justice Gorsuch not participating in the decision. And the six justices basically relied on this classic due process test called Matthews versus Eldridge, which says we're going to look at three factors when it comes to a procedural due process claim. One, what is the plaintiff's interest at stake? What is the government's interest at stake? And is there a risk of an erroneous deprivation of rights, and how great is that risk? And to what extent would increased procedures mitigate that risk? So the court basically says, look, as to private and government interest, it's very clear that the petitioners here have a strong interest because this money is theirs, and the government has no interest any longer because once the conviction is overturned, the sole justification for the government taking that money in the first place is gone. And so they are entitled to receive that money back. And they, of course, as you'd expect, focus a lot on the axiomatic nature of the presumption of innocence when they talk about erroneous deprivation of rights. There's a great risk that you're going to be erroneously deprived of a right when you have to prove your own innocence and you carry the burden of proving by clear and convincing evidence that you didn't commit a crime. So they say, look, the risk is high, and yet the government has no interest, and clearly the plaintiffs have a strong interest in getting back money that is theirs. And sort of the money quote, I think, in the majority opinion that's been quoted since by many commentators is this, that Colorado may not presume a person adjudged guilty of no crime, nonetheless guilty enough for monetary exaction. So the court says, the presumption of innocence is so fundamental that we can't allow Colorado to keep someone's money unless they can prove, by clear and convincing evidence, their own innocence. Justice Alito has some fundamental criticisms about this approach, even though he comes to the same result. Justice Alito said, hey, we should actually be applying a different due process test that's from a case called Medina versus California. In Medina, California versus California, the rule basically is that when we're dealing with criminal procedure, we're not going to apply Matthews versus Eldridge. We're going to apply a stricter test because there's already so many constitutional procedural protections that we have in place. So So we have your right to counsel. We have rights against self-incrimination. We have the confrontation clause, all kinds of evidentiary requirements. And all of these kind of work together to crowd out the general due process clause. So we're going to say if you could bring a procedural due process claim, we're going to require a higher burden. And the test basically is, did the state procedure violate some fundamental notion of justice? And Justice Alito says, basically, this is a historical inquiry, and we're going to look back at historical practice. And he said, under that standard, it's clear that the petitioner should still win because the presumption of innocence enjoys a long historical recognition, and an individual's right to be refunded a civil judgment if the civil judgment is vacated has also great historical prestige. And so he said this would violate a fundamental notion of justice under that logic. And the reason he wants to go with Matthews versus Eldridge is he says there's no real logical stopping point to the majority's analysis. So he said if the majority's analysis is right, and it basically says, hey, it's the duty of Colorado to return exonerees back to the status quo ante, then why wouldn't they also have a due process right to compensation for all of the losses they may have suffered as a result of their conviction? That would include economic losses because they weren't able to be employed full-time while they were serving their sentence. It would be damage to their reputation. It would be all sorts of other things, all of which are much more substantial than just the fees, costs, and restitution you pay for in the course of your conviction. So he's concerned that the majority's analysis has really been much broader than necessary, that it fundamentally questions whether or not an exoneree has a much more a fundamental right to compensation and things like that for time served, for economic losses, and so forth. And that would really disrupt a lot of exoneration acts across the country, most of which require that a person prove their own innocence in order to be compensated under the act for the time that they served wrongfully. So Justice Thomas takes an entirely different route here and points out an interesting omission by the majority analysis, which is whether or not there is a property interest here in the first place. He says, now look, the majority waxes eloquent about the presumption of innocence, but they fail to address a deeper issue, which is whether or not these petitioners actually have a property interest in that money. And he says that we have to look to state law for that. He cites Board of Regents versus Roth, which is sort of a classic formulation for stating this sort of positivistic view of property rights, which is if it's not a property right founded in state law, then it's not a property right at all. And he says the state of Colorado, essentially once it has taken that money from you pursuant to a valid conviction, even if that conviction is overturned later, that money is the state's. And there's nothing in state law that says otherwise. And he says, look, if the petitioners here have a property interest, it must sound in the Due Process Clause itself. And he says, you know, the Due Process Clause does not carry any substantive components to it. So because the Constitution, he says, does not create property rights, it only protects them, and Colorado state law does not create a property right in that money after a valid conviction, even if the conviction is overturned, there simply is no property interest here at all, and the petitioners simply have no claim of right to that money. You know, there is some interesting tension with regard to the substantive due process clause because the majority basically said, hey, you don't. Not only does this procedure overly burden you, but we're going to require that there be no procedure at all. You have an automatic right to that money back. And that sounds a lot like substantive due process, which typically says, regardless of the procedural protections you provide, we're not going to allow you to take this individual's property or liberty interest in this setting. And that's kind of what this sounds like. It's basically saying, no matter what kind of procedural burden you place on the petitioner, it will be unconstitutional because they have an automatic right to that money. But the court insists that it's making a procedural due process analysis. And likewise, the court refuses to acknowledge what I think is correctly noted by Justice Thomas, that there is a deeper issue as to whether there's a property interest here. I disagree with Justice Thomas, and I think ultimately this is a chance for the court to have said, hey, look, there is a fundamental concept of property rights that we're going to recognize whether or not it's recognized by state law, and that's protected by the due process clause. Nonetheless, the court focused solely on the procedural elements of the case, and that was Justice Thomas's core complaint and the ground for his dissent. So Nelson versus Colorado is kind of both a unsurprising case and an interesting case with regard to what the court doesn't address. It also potentially has some implications for other areas of law. Some people watching the case hoped that the court would give us some good language to fight civil asset forfeiture. Of course, that's a different context, but nonetheless, it does have some some similarity to what's going on in Colorado, since often a person has to prove their own innocence to get back things that the police take, even if you are an innocent property owner. And the court did indeed deliver maybe on that a little bit when it said that Colorado may not presume a person adjudged guilty of no crime, nonetheless guilty enough for monetary exaction. So essentially saying, hey, if you're innocent, they can't say that you're nonetheless guilty with regard to property taken away from you. And that's exactly the situation you see in asset forfeiture. So it's possible, and I don't know if the court was pointing that direction, that we may see some citations to Nelson versus Colorado in the fight against civil asset forfeiture. In any case, it's a very important case, although Colorado was the only state that has this kind of uniquely burdensome process for getting back money that was already yours that you gave to the state because of conviction. So it has both a limited scope and potentially a broader one for those who would oppose things like civil asset forfeiture.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.fedsoc.org/multimedia.